So, Kristen, we're here to talk about 127 Hours,
indeed,
the movie that's,
we are, yeah.
That's the cause celebre these days. And the reason that it's the cause celebre these days is because there's been all this advance news stories, some might say publicity, about
ooh,
people.
Mr. Skeptical.
I am
listen
skeptical.
To that tone. Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, there's all these stories coming out ahead of the movie's release about people fleeing from the theater, vomiting, fainting, having to be carted out by an ambulance.
Mm-hmm.
And
you're making it sound like you're embarrassed. It's okay that you threw up and got carted away. But it's okay, Rafer.
There was no vomit coming out of me. There was no vomit coming out of me during that film. But I have to believe that all this stuff is fake. It reminds me of all the hoopla surrounding The Exorcist back in whatever that was, 73 or something. All these stories of people screaming and fainting and having seizures and vomiting in the lobbies and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it turns out later on that it was all just a big publicity stunt. And that's my position. I call BS.
Do you?
I do.
Well, do you want to know whether or not I fainted, up, or?
I do. I do want to know. What was your physical reaction to the film?
I'm going to tell you right after I introduce myself. This is Kristen Meinzer. I am a producer with The Takeaway.
And I'm Rafer Guzman, movie critic for Newsday, and this is Movie Date.
Now, Rafer, I went into this film knowing only a tiny little bit about 127 hours. I remember reading some blurb months ago, and
yeah.
I try to not read any previews or anything before I go into movies. But then very early on in the movie, I realized, oh, God, this is the movie where he cuts off his arm.
Right. The true story, Aaron Ralston, the hiker, mountaineer, biker type, gets himself stuck in a, I don't know what, crevice, canyon
crevasse.
Of some sort. Crevasse.
I believe
thank
they
you.
Pronounce
yes.
it crevasse.
Crevasse. Thank you. And has his arm pinned, and in order to survive and get out, he has to saw it off himself.
He sure does. And yeah. And so partway into the movie, I realized, oh, damn, this is that movie.
Right.
I'm sitting in the movie where he has to. Okay. So what actually gets me is not the part where he's sawing his arm off. And we don't want to give too much away to our. Well can
not,
you not give
away?
There's
not
nothing
much
to give away.
Away. Right. Exactly. We all know.
We all know this. This
right.
is the it's being called the James Franco saws off his arm movie by many people
exactly.
for shorthand. Anywho, so the movie starts off with him being so carefree and confident
yeah.
that he's completely reckless, actually.
Yes, right.
So reckless that my stomach is already getting a little bit uncomfortable because it's like, oh, I know what's going to happen. I know what's going to happen. And maybe my stomach would have felt fine if I didn't know that this was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I would have just been, look at this carefree guy. Look at him. He's jumping off things and he's climbing things and
right.
so on. But as the movie continues over the first, I think it's a half hour before he even gets pinned.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I'm just getting more and more tense and more uncomfortable because I see it's leading up to this. And he's just really, I don't know, he's courting danger.
Yeah.
He's not defying it. He's totally courting danger.
Yes.
With each scene, it's getting worse and worse, it seems like.
Right.
And then by the time it finally happens, the point where he actually has his arm pinned by the boulder.
Right.
I did not almost throw up, but I did. I am so sorry to have to say this on a podcast that people hear. I almost lost control of my bowels.
Did you really?
Yeah, I was just so, I just, oh my God, I just said it. Yep, that's
well,
what happened.
Hey,
it was,
that's, you know.
And at that same point, when he gets pinned by the boulder, people walked out.
Yes, I think you told me that.
Yes.
I think you told me people walked out.
People
all right.
walked out. And this
all
is a right. press screening. These are
yeah.
hardcore critics who can handle anything. They sat through Human Centipede.
Right.
You know? And somehow they're walking out. I'm just like, I'm not really sure if I can manage staying there any longer. But
wow.
I say, you know what? I'm going to force myself to sit through this. I have to do this. Eventually, I have to talk about this movie. So I
That's
have to sit through the rest
have a job
of this
to
movie.
Do.
I have a job. This is my job. I have to do this. But I was really uncomfortable.
Okay.
And the reason why that moment got me was it reminded me of a mouse stepping on a glue trap.
Right.
And
right.
it's that moment where you're just trapped with the mouse. The mouse can't go anywhere. We know that there's only two outcomes for this mouse. You're either going to die on this glue trap or you're going to eat off your own paw.
That's right.
And get away from here. But then you have like a missing paw.
Right. Well,
poor little mouse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know.
But, yeah.
I know.
And so that's the part that got me sick. The part that had to do with him sawing off his arm, I was just really not so sick. I was, thank God you finally did this.
Yeah, right.
Get away from here.
Right, right.
I've been watching you for almost 6 days.
Right.
Punch the rock, yell at the rock, shove
right.
the rock, chip away at the rock. Everything he could possibly do with this
yep.
rock where he's in this dark, crevasse. Where he gets 15 minutes of sunlight a day, and it's roughly 44 degrees or something like that at night.
Yeah,
very cold.
Yeah.
And watching him trapped, drinking his own urine day after day.
Yep.
It wasn't the chopping the arm off that made me sick.
I was
actually very relieved.
You were relieved.
My stomach relaxed quite a bit after he chopped off his arm. I was like, oh, thank God he's finally chopping off his arm.
That's interesting. I remember when the story came out, I think it was maybe 2003 or so when it happened.
And his autobiography?
Yes, it's called A Rock and a Hard Place. You can't say the guy doesn't have a sense of humor. You know what the climactic chapter in that biography is called?
No.
A Farewell to Arm.
No, it is
yes,
not.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
It is not.
You've got to give him points for that.
Oh, Aaron Ralston.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Aaron Ralston, right. I remember when the story hit the news, and I don't know if anyone else reacted this way, but I just could not fathom it. I could not wrap my head around it. The idea that however you were trapped, that only your arm was trapped, that you had a free arm and two free legs, and that you somehow couldn't get yourself stuck out of this weird position that you're in. I just somehow, I don't know what it was. My mind couldn't grasp it. And
you just thought, push the rock off.
Yeah, or something. And I just kind of thought, how could that be? I can't understand that. I think it was probably just denial. I just didn't want to believe that a person could get himself in such an awful situation. And the one thing, maybe this is just my own quirk, but the one thing the movie does a really excellent job of is showing you, no, dude, there's no other way out. This is it.
It makes
you know?
It really clear. And that's where my stomach left me. That's the moment where it was so obvious. He's pretty much dangling by his wrist from that situation.
Yeah.
He has to set up a pulley system so he can actually relax
can
a little bit
and right.
sleep.
Exactly.
And, yeah. It's very.
And they go through all the details, right? You know, he's got. So the first thing you think, right? Pulley system. Wait. You know, if you've got a pulley system, how come you're not getting that boulder out? Well, the boulder is really heavy, and he had mountain climbing ropes.
Yeah.
So there wasn't enough. There was too much stretch, so he couldn't get a good grip on it. Plus, he's probably by that time, I think he was fairly well exhausted and you know, malnourished. But there's that great little moment at the beginning of the film where he takes stock of everything he has. Right, he lays his headlamp, his water bottle, he lays everything out.
His weird 8-in-1 tool.
Yeah, which he specifically says is like not even a Swiss Army knife. It's like
the
a cheap
free gift
knockoff.
You get with a $15
right.
with a $15 flashlight. Yeah,
right. And the one item that I love that just sticks out of that little array that he lays out is his Capital One credit card. I just love looking at that, just thinking like, nope, no good. No good here in Blue John Canyon in Utah. You don't have a flare. There's no one around. The credit card, not worth a thing.
But isn't that the great thing about survival movies? You really just want to see what tools are they given, and you want to know the tools.
Right.
And to see them use those tools to the best of their abilities.
Right.
I mean, it's that combined with man against nature, human will.
Right.
The thirst for life. I think this movie was very much about the thirst for life. He's so full of life, and he's so vibrant, and he actually has a sense of humor throughout a lot of this stuff, which was shocking to me that you could have a sense of humor at all when you're in this terrible situation. But, I mean, do you have other survival movies that you think have any humor in them besides this? I'm trying to think if there are
humor,
any.
Humor is a tough one. It's weird because there aren't many other movies like this out there. You know, I mean, one guy trapped in a bad situation, it's essentially a one-actor film, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there are people that come in here and there. You know, there's a couple of peripheral characters at the beginning. There's a few flashbacks, but the flashbacks are very short. You know, mom, dad, sis, those characters are very fleeting. You know they mean something to him, but we're not getting some big drawn-out story about them, you know. And we're not getting a bunch of family time. They're just kind of there as...
Look, I do have a life outside of this canyon.
Right.
Or
right.
I did.
Yeah, or I did. And gee, maybe that life was more worth living than I thought. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe I took that life for granted. The only other movie I could really think of was Castaway with Tom Hanks, a movie that I actually love deeply. Which
really?
I think it is.
Is he really by himself? He has that volleyball who's his friend.
Yeah, Wilson, the volleyball. He draws a little face on it, right?
Did that thought ever cross your brain? Well, regardless, I would rather take my chance out there on the ocean than to stay here and die on this shithole island, spending the rest of my life talking to a goddamn volleyball!
And the moment that he and Wilson get parted is a heart-wrenching scene.
It's true. It's true. I got a little verklempt when...
I think that movie is actually a profound film. And I hate to say that about a Robert Zemeckis film, because he's not the most profound director. Roger Rabbit, you know, Death Becomes Her. But Castaway, and then the only other one I could think of was Into the Wild, where the guy goes out, very similar. You know, he just strikes out on his own.
It's a Sean Penn movie.
Sean Penn movie, yeah. Right. Just goes out into the wilderness and, again, not a spoiler because it was based on a true story, and dies. You know, he doesn't make it. It's a profound film because what you get is one guy removed from all the things that make you you, right? All the things that you'd use to define yourself are no longer around you. It's just you now, and you're out in the wilderness, and then you begin to start taking stock and you think, who are you? What are the things that make up me? And I feel like that this movie, 127 Hours, does a very good job of that.
I think it does a good job of it, and I think it's such a hard thing to do because, as you say, you really just have one person on screen.
Right.
And if you want to have a really long monologue, you can have that, but nobody wants to sit through that.
No, right,
but how
exactly.
But how do you keep the story interesting? I think it's really an art to direct this kind of film and make it interesting and make – the viewers still want to pay attention and have a sense of suspense. And, I mean, I think that's almost easier to do with a documentary of this kind of story because you can, you know, have the person speaking for themselves. You can have other people interviewed and so on.
Right.
You know, something that I think is an interesting sort of in-between thing was this film called Touching the Void that was out a few years ago, which I'm not sure if you're familiar with it.
No. The title is familiar.
Yeah, two buddies who are mountain climbers. I don't know if they're on Everest or I don't think it's Everest. It's some other, but they're tied together.
Uh-huh.
They're tethered together. Okay. They've been climbing buddies for a really long time.
Okay.
One of them at a certain point ends up falling off into a crevasse and the other one is barely holding on.
Ah, yes.
And the one who's holding on eventually after about an hour says, I just can't hold you anymore. You can't get up here. I can't get you up here. I have to saw you off.
Wow.
So he cuts the rope.
Right.
And
whew.
And then the rest of the movie follows the guy who got cut off.
Who got cut off.
Yeah.
Ah,
so we follow him and it's horrifying, but he makes it.
Interesting.
He makes it. And what was originally going to happen was it was going to be a documentary where both of them reenacted step by step what happened in the whole movie.
So this was a documentary. This was a true story.
It was a true story.
Oh, wow.
And it was
okay.
going to follow step by step what happened with them. But then apparently very early in the filming process, they just hated each other so much at this point. They had to turn it into kind of a docudrama instead. So they have actors do all of it instead.
Okay.
And I thought that was fascinating because it was this interesting in-between thing where it feels sort of like a documentary, but it's actually kind of a drama because they couldn't get the real people involved because they hate each other. Because
right.
one felt the other was trying to kill him, you know.
Which she sort of was.
Which she kind of was.
You know, sort of.
There's that whole thing.
Yeah.
But, I mean, as far as just one person, non-documentary at all, I thought 127 Hours did a great job.
I did too. I really liked it. I thought it was really good. I think the movie wants to be an Oscar contender. I a little bit have my doubts. I don't know if James Franco is going to wind up on that list for the nominations. But
I don't know if he will, but he's very good.
I
think Danny Boyle, though, will.
Yeah, he might.
I think the director, he did a great job. As I said, directing with very little to work with, I thought he did a great job.
Yes, I totally agree.
If you want to get regular updates from Movie Date or give us suggestions, text the word movies to 69866.
And, Kristen, you can become a fan of Movie Date on Facebook if you want to give us feedback on the podcast or suggest the movies that we should see next.
Excellent.